joining me on Beyond the Playlist is John O'Callaghan. He's a musician and songwriter from the main band, but he's got a solo project coming out soon, and we're going to talk a little bit about that too. So, John, welcome to Beyond the Playlist.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I am very excited to have you on. When I got the email saying, hey, listen to this song, I did. And I remember two things happened at once. Is I liked it, but the more shocking thing, my 16-year-old really liked it.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, that's good, because it feels that I feel like I'm somewhere probably in the middle. Then I'm 32 now, so I know that my parents are probably going to be obviously biased, no matter what. You know, it's like having your kid on the Little League team and thinking he's the best, no matter if he's the worst or not. Yeah. But it's generational, hopefully, you know, multi-generational.
Yeah, it was funny because there was another band that somebody had sent me to say, hey, you want to listen to these guys? And I really liked them. Like, I really dug them. And my kid was like, nope, nope. She just kept shaking her head going, nope, Dad, you're not interviewing those guys. And if you do, it's all on you. That's your call.
And well, that's the beauty about being young, is you kind of have no filter, which is commendable, yeah. You know?
And because I've been doing this for so long now, she knows what my style of music is and where I fall. And when we played your single, she instantly was like, ooh, what's that? And her ears perked up. And I'm like, hey, that's a good sign.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's, I've been doing this now for 15 years. So, in different capacities, more often than not, it's with four other guys. Five usually, because we have a producer. So bouncing in and with just one other guy this time around is kind of a unique stance for me to take. You know, I don't have the crutch of being able to bounce things off of four other minds. So,
well, let's go back a little bit, because let's tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got started in music, because everyone's origin story is a little bit different.
Sure. I mean, more or less, it's my parents weren't very musical, but they both loved music, and they still do. So there was always music around and on. So it wasn't probably until I turned 12, that Christmas they bought me a guitar, and I wanted to play guitar because I had cousins that played guitar, and they were the cooler, older cousins. So I wanted to keep up with the Joneses, and I had an uncle who kind of set the bar there. He was the one that got them into it, and thus they got me into it. And I kind of didn't do anything with it. And then high school came around, and I started messing around on a program called Fruity Loops. And I just kind of started creating arrangements of just silly songs, to be honest, and didn't really do anything with those or with music in general, other than supporting friends and bands, until college rolled around. And I had no idea what the hell I was going to school for. So first summer rolled around, and I got into a band, and we went on tour, and then we kind of just didn't stop after that.
What was the name of that first band?
It was The Main.
Oh, that was your first band?
Yeah.
Wow. So that's
the first
big
band
start.
I was in. And yeah, we, you know, we had a couple lucky bounces, and I'd like to think people liked some of the songs, and then we kind of just didn't give people the opportunity to forget about us. We just kind of pedaled to the metal, and we stayed on the road, and then 15 years went by, and now I'm older.
You must enjoy the band situation, because you've been at it for so long. What prompted you to decide to kind of step out and do the solo project?
I put out an EP in 2016. I recorded some songs in my bedroom, and with the help of my drummer and another buddy of mine, Brennan Smiley, who plays in a band called the Technicolors. And that was just kind of, you know, I'm constantly writing songs, so there's always an influx of material, and inevitably there's material that will never see the light of day, because, you know, there's only so many songs you can put on an album and then release during the cycle of that album. Or I guess we could have gone the Wilco route and just kept releasing stuff, or Neil Young route, or, you know, whatever. But I had just an overflow of songs. And with COVID happening, I had an overflow of time. So I had about 12 or 14 extra songs that I sort of sifted through, and with the help of my buddy Matt Keller, he helped produce what ended up being the 9 songs. It was kind of like a, hey, I'm going to do a song. And we recorded the song, and then I put it out. And then it was like, hey, I got another couple songs. And I recorded those. And I was like, well, I'll just put out an album. So it ended up being 9 songs. And it was just, I had a lot of time.
The dynamic between doing a solo project and doing a band project has to be very different as far as the process of writing and the process of vetting what is good and what isn't good.
Absolutely. I think we've become so, I guess I wouldn't say formulaic, but there's definitely a method to how the main makes records. And it's a lot more involved than this solo project was. It was a lot, you know, it's a lot of lead up time, because you know that when the main's going to put out an album, you have probably a guarantee of about 2 years on touring that album and sort of investing the time on the road to take that material. So you want to really invest the time prior, making sure that that's what you're going to want to be listening to and playing for the next, you know, 24 months. So with this stuff, it was just, hey, I feel good about this material. Am I going to love it in 6 months? I have no idea, but I felt it at the time. And, you know, there was really just myself and Matt, who we were the vetting process. We were the vetters. We were the ones saying, hey, this feels cool. Let's just go for it. And that was kind of the beauty of it, is that it's not that I was less precious about this stuff. It was just that it felt right in the moment. And, you know, we'll see, you know, how people react to it come February 12th.
Well, so it's one of those, it's an amazing conversation to have, because when you're in a band situation, there's a lot of decision by committee. And sometimes that really slows you down and gets in the way. And sometimes it really helps, because some of the bad decisions and bad choices are kicked out and moved on. But at the same time, when you're doing on your own, it's very streamlined. There's no committee to slow things down, but there's also not that other set of voices to go, I don't know if that's something you really want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what I do have under my belt is the idea that I've done records with the main. We will have had 8, because we already have another one in the can. So I've gone through the process of what it is to record for myself and for the band. So I think you're right. Like, I don't know if I hadn't had the experience of recording an album and releasing it and being vulnerable to a point where it's like, all right, this isn't my music anymore. This is the music for whoever listens to it. You know, I've seen too many artists, a lot of really good friends. I've seen a lot of people get in their way, like you're talking about. I've seen them, you know, overthink and redo and rethink and rethink and overthink so many times to the point where nothing ever gets put out.
Yeah.
And I understand that mentality to a certain extent. But at this point, like I said, I think I'm very fortunate that I've gone through that process several times over, so that it's not that, again, not that I am not proud of these songs or not that they're not precious to me, but I think the whole idea of being vulnerable and putting out music means something completely different to me now, 15 years later, than it did, you know, at square one.
As you move forward, are the experiences of recording this album and kind of the way you went about doing it, are you going to bring those back to the band setting and try to maybe not impose them, but bring those ideas to a larger group of people to try to do something different? Because you did say there's a formula to it, kind of, and to maybe shake that up, maybe shakes up the entire creative process for everybody.
Absolutely. I think what's really interesting is our band has gone through so many iterations of the internet and technology that it's really, I think for a band that's starting out now, I think it's incumbent upon them to utilize the technology in whatever way they see fit, but realize also that, you know, maybe next week there's going to be a different part of the process that's introduced that you kind of, you need to feel out yourself. for yourself. And for the main, we recorded an album. A lot of it was similar to this John the Ghost stuff in that we didn't necessarily stand up in a room, which we normally do. And by that, I mean, we didn't jam it out, you know, live instruments and sort of hash it out, you know, standing up and sweating in a practice space. It was like, it was a lot more, I mean, what they call it is just in the box, meaning in the computer.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of synthetic demo drums. Then, you know, Pat, our drummer, has to learn those parts. Sometimes it's to a fault because they're impossible to play. But, you know, I think you get a clearer picture. At least that's where we're at now, is that we're getting a clearer picture of the songs prior to ever even starting to record them, which helps that vetting process, which helps the idea of, hey, this isn't going to cut it because this isn't as good as the other eight that we have, you know, under our belt. So there's certainly parts of the process that we will introduce to the next record. And, you know, I think it's just a mixture of whatever you make it. You know, if you want it to sound analog, I mean, we've done a record in Nashville to tape and we got that sound and it was hard as hell and it made us a better band, you know? So I think having seen,
I like how you bring that up as a novelty. When I was recording music, that's all it was.
Absolutely. No, but I think that's, you know, nowadays it's just different. It's not any better or any worse. It's just, you know, you got to embrace now, because even if I didn't have the luxury of having the studio that I recorded John the Ghost in, I would have the technology to do it in a 5x5 cubic room, you know, and that's the beauty of where music is at. And some people can view it as a negative. I like to view it as the best ideas kind of surface and hopefully those ideas will be heard by, you know, a lot of people. Drifting in the night with my tail lights between trouble and
down the road, I'm singing, hand out the road down.
Well, one of the things that I've had discussed is that even all that, the button pushing and in the box stuff and the synthetic stuff, you still have to have a skill set to use all that stuff appropriately. The example I like to use is I bought a Native Instruments machine a couple of years ago, and it sat on the corner of my desk, and I would thump on it every couple of days, and it would not do and sound the way that I wanted it to. And I realized that the whole learning curve of using that as an instrument isn't as easy. It's the same learning curve as I would for learning the Chapman stick. So
absolutely.
So it's just a different format. And so for people who think that music is easy now, there are a lot of shortcuts and things you can do. But the skill set to actually turn out a good song hasn't changed. The tools have.
Absolutely. And what's so funny is the old studio that we were working in, we were working in the B room, and in the A room was this great producer from Arizona named Bob Hoag. And he's an old school guy. You know, he's recording to tape and so knowledgeable about the gear and everything. And the A room at Flying Blanket in Mesa, Arizona, beautiful, huge live drum room. And I was in the B room and he came over asking for something or other. And I have the Native Instruments machine, and there's the mode that enables the chord mode. Uh-huh. And so you have the 16 pad sequencer that you can kind of play as many different chords with just the touch of a button. And he walked in and I'm playing some ornate chord progression by just hitting these buttons and not sitting behind the piano. And he's like, "What the hell is going on in here?" And I was like, "You don't want to know. Like, Mozart is rolling over somewhere."
How much time do you spend keeping up with technology and gear so that you can implement these tools as they come along?
I mean, to be honest, probably not a lot less time than I should. Fortunately, our drummer, actually everybody in the band kind of tries to some degree of keeping up. We kind of refused to use the Kemper amps for a long time on stage. And then, you know, after the Fender Twin blew out on tour and, you know, some of that, actually the expensive old gear that you bring out, eventually, you know, something goes wrong and then it's near impossible to fix day of. So we caved on the Kempers, and then, you know, there are a lot of things we have kept up with, but there, you know, we have a lot of outboard gear that our drummer has accumulated over the years, and I have no idea how to operate any of it. So I'm constantly FaceTiming him like, "Hey, what is this? What is this button? Do I need phantom power on this? What am I doing here?" So, I mean, I'm probably in the band, I'm probably the worst at it, but you know, it's again, having the luxury of having other guys being able to show you, come, you know, a couple of those tips and tricks. It's cool to kind of put and build into your repertoire for sure.
When I was in college, I was actually supplementing my income by being a professional harmonica player. And I remember I went kind of gear nuts for a while because I discovered John Popper and all the things he would do with a harmonica. And I remember I bought a giant Digitech footboard that was programmable. And I programmed a flanger and I programmed distortions and reverbs and all kinds of stuff in there. And I had the volume pedal right there. So like the guitar player and I had the same foot pedal basically. And I used it for like a year. And after the year, I sold it and I bought myself a Pignose amplifier and would run it directly to the board. And I had all the same amount of fun with only one piece of gear and no thinking. And it changed, absolutely, it changed everything for me.
Totally. Especially with gear, it can quickly become a black hole and you can just get sucked right into it. I mean, I've seen it with friends and guitars, you know, where you're like, "Why do you have 55 guitars? You only play three of them." I'm like, "Oh, you know, to each their own."
Well, it's the same thing that happens when you get into a studio and you start mixing around with plugins. You can go down a plug-in hole with nine different types of reverb. You can set everything up to sound like you're at Abbey Road. And then you realize that everything you've done actually doesn't help. And you have to pull out of all of it and figure out where you actually need to be. And so anytime you start kind of getting down to those trails of, you know, reckless abandon, it can in some ways cause more damage than do good, because you just sometimes are piling things on to pile on.
Absolutely. I'm still reluctant to buy any massive collection of, you know, I've been toying around with buying Omnisphere, and I'm just fearful that there are too many sounds. Like, there are too many options where I just probably spend days just going through the Hammond organ sounds, you know, where you're just like, how many different variations of this organ exist? So, I always relate it to the idea that, you know, Jack White, I think that the famous red guitar, I'm pretty sure is like a Sears guitar that you know, it was $75 or something like that. But then you put the guy behind the guitar and that's what makes it, you know, you can have the $40,000 gold top, but if you don't know how to manipulate it, then it's no good. You know,
it just goes right back to that same thing. The tools are tools. You can give me a hammer and chisel, and the most important thing I might do is cut my finger off. Give it to another person who actually knows what they're doing, and they can carve something beautiful out of a piece of wood.
Undoubtedly, for sure.
Well, tell me a little bit about this solo project. When's it coming out? When can people get more information about it? You know, some actual, you know, physical details about this thing.
Yeah. It's 9 songs. It's called I Only Want to Live Once. It will be out on February 12th. To this point, I've released 3 songs so far. And the vibe is definitely different than the EP that I put out in 2016. The sound alone is different in that it wasn't recorded in a garage. It was recorded in a studio, and it was co-produced by my buddy Matt Keller. So I don't know, the songs, they vary in feeling. And I think that's the neat part about it, is that it's kind of a hodgepodge of what I was trying to write at the time for the main and then what I was feeling at the time just as an individual.
I really enjoyed that one song that was attached to the email that was sent to me. I really enjoyed. Does the whole thing kind of have that kind of vibe and feel to it?
I definitely think that there are... there are glimmers of like, hopefully the good parts of the 80s in some of it.
Depends on who you talk to, what they decide to be the good parts. I mean, the good parts could be anything from, I mean, you could go Bobby Brown to Bon Jovi as far as the good parts, depending on who you talk to.
Absolutely. I don't know. I think it's also hard to have the zoom out from my perspective. Because one, I've been listening to these songs, you know, mixing and mastering them for however many months. I got a good response out of the first tune called Rolled Down Window.
That's the one. That's the one that was attached to the email. And I got to say, like I said, when a 50-year-old and a 16-year-old like the same song, you've done something.
Well, that's awesome. And hopefully, you know, that same sort of feeling can hold true for all 9 tracks. I guess just, you know, time will tell.
Well, where can people find you, follow you, keep up with what you're doing, keep up with the main, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, John the Ghost is on Spotify. The main, spelt like the state with an E, because being from Arizona and calling yourself the main makes sense. we're on all the socials. We're on, you can follow me at John Main on Twitter. I wouldn't advise it because I just tweet once a day and it's usually cryptic and people are like, what the hell is this guy talking about? You can go on Instagram. The Fifth John is my handle. We're probably everywhere except for TikTok. I don't know anything about that. Oh, so I know it's a platform. I just wouldn't know where to begin.
Yep. I have refused to download the TikTok, and I'm the only one in my house who doesn't use the TikTok.
There you go. Well, I'll be in your company. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I've seen videos. Some are funny.
There are some clever people out there. I'm not going to be one of them.
Absolutely are.
I didn't start using hashtags for years because I always thought a hashtag was something you found in your underwear when you didn't take care of yourself right. Well, John, I really appreciate this conversation. You are, I thoroughly enjoyed this. You're awesome.
Right on. Thank you. You're awesome too. I appreciate you having me on it.
For more Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C, you can go to jhammondc.com. You can follow me on Twitter at jhammondc. You can email the show at jhammondc@gmail.com. The theme music is by Magnus Ellegren, featuring Jimmy C and the New York Brass. The cover art is by Phil Rude. You can join the Facebook group for Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C. You can find this and other fine shows streaming at Alpha Geek Radio. If you like what you hear, you can go to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a review. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C.
Drive till the road runs out. You wanna go for a drive?